Welcome to Parents Perspective. Wait till you see where I put the stuff. 15-year-old Mark grinned at his pals Jake and Sean. Better be quick, Jake replied, tromping behind Mark through mounds of dried leaves and underbrush.
Yeah, agreed Sean. Lunch is over in 10 minutes and they'll definitely miss us in math class.
Don't worry. Mark bent down and brushed some evergreen branches off a small wooden crate.
Here's the treasure, he exclaimed proudly. Anybody thirsty?
Sure gotta hand it to you. Sean took a swig of scotch from the bottle, then wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
Nobody would have found this.
Hey, are we on for 3:30 after the buses leave?
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about teens and alcohol addiction? I'm Sandy Burt. Linda Perlis could not be with us today. She'll be back soon. Our guest knows about alcohol addiction from personal experience. George is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, and frequently speaks on alcohol addiction. He is a father and grandfather and has been married for 54 years. He was employed for 44 years at the same firm. Welcome to Parents Perspective, George.
Thank you, Sandy. Appreciate it very much.
From the vantage point of a member of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, what would you want teenagers to know about alcohol?
Alcoholism is an illness of denial. And we talk of denial as not a river in Egypt. Basically, if you drink, you can get drunk. You can become addicted to alcohol. Not every person who drinks is going to become an alcoholic. However, it's there. My basic objective is to say to people that if alcohol becomes a problem, don't be afraid to pick up the 2,000-pound telephone and ask for help.
You said to me when we were talking earlier that you had a very interesting question you asked people recently. Would you like to explain that?
Certainly. There's approximately three times for 50 or 60 people each, I asked the question, how many people had their first drink after they were 18 years of age? In the first group of 50 people, nobody raised their hand. In the second group of 50 people, one person raised their hand. In the third group, three people raised their hands, which means and indicates to me that 97% of the people that were in the rooms started drinking as a teenager.
And teens never think they'll get hooked on anything, of course. So when does addiction usually happen and how does it happen?
I can't say how it happens. I think most people will start to fit in, peer pressure, that they want to fit. And maybe they can't communicate with their parents. They don't know what to do. They will start to try to become a part of a crowd in one fashion or another. Alcohol is good for them, but then eventually will turn on them. When will it turn? It could be within a very short period of time, or it could be 20 or 30 years down the road. If alcohol starts causing problems for you, don't be afraid to pick up the 2,000-pound telephone and ask for help.
If you were the parent of a teen today, what would you want to be aware of?
My father was an alcoholic. Change that. My father was a drunk. I can't call him an alcoholic.
What's the difference?
I can only call myself an alcoholic. They say if you look like a duck and you quack like a duck, then chances are you're a duck. And I started hanging around with people of AA, and they started talking, and I started feeling like I was part of their crowd. And they call themselves alcoholics, so I call myself an alcoholic. If I get the opportunity, I would like to try to define alcoholism. Something that a friend of mine told me, that alcoholism is an illness. It's a threefold illness. It is a physical illness coupled with a mental obsession based upon a spiritual condition. It is progressive in that it is cunning, baffling, powerful. And personally, I want to add the word patient. It is sitting waiting for me to say, oh, I can handle you. It is progressive in nature. It is misunderstood by most people. It is an illness that can be treated but never cured. No matter what happens, and this is where AA may differ from other places, a lot of people say, well, how can you what can you do about alcohol? Should I drink less, or would I have a party, or would you talk to me about not getting in trouble? Because I know that we're going to be talking about prom time. Where are we going to go with this? And AA's attitude is we want to help the alcoholic who has a problem. We're not going to tell anybody how they should go out there and drink or don't drink. the basic aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous is don't drink, period. However, if you should drink, keep coming back because we do understand the illness of alcohol.
Okay. So parents of teens should be on the lookout for what, do you think?
AA has a couple of pamphlets out. One here is called Young People in AA. It's called Pamphlet P4, which is Pamphlet 4, if anybody wants to try to get it from the local AA group or any AA meeting. And there's another one called, this is a message to teenagers, how to tell when drinking becoming a problem. And some of the questions that it's asked is a very simple little thing. Do you drink because you have problems? Do you drink because you want to relax? Do you drink when you get mad at other people, your friends or parents? Do you prefer to drink alone rather than with others? Are your grades starting to slip? Are you goofing off on your job? Did you ever try to stop drinking or drink less and fail? Have you begun to drink in the morning, before school, or at work? Do you gulp your drinks? Do you ever have a loss of memory due to drinking? Do you lie about your drinking? Do you ever get in trouble when you're drinking? Do you ever get drunk when you drink, even though you didn't mean to? Do you think it's cool to be able to hold your liquor? These are some of the questions that the individual has to ask, but parents have to also pay attention to what's going on with their children. As I said, my father was an alcoholic, but one of the things my father told me that I really appreciated was, tell me who your friends are and I'll tell you what you are. And I went with that, and I've come to realize that all of my friends started to become my barroom buddies.
Okay, so if you have a teenager and your kids are hanging around kids who are drinking, or your kid is someplace where you're pretty sure drinking is going on, that's a warning sign right
there.
That's
one of the great warning signs. Now, there's a child going out there and sowing their wild oats. They want to get it out of their system. I don't know. Will it continue on? We don't know. The status of alcoholism or alcoholics is probably 7 to 10% of the populace. 30% of the populace are heavy drinkers, and probably the other 70% are normal social drinkers or non-drinkers of alcohol. I think the major problem is to determine that the alcoholic wants to think he's a heavy drinker and he hasn't crossed an invisible line. There is an invisible line where you cross from heavy drinking into alcoholism. And you don't know when you cross it. It can be at almost any age. I know people that have come in the rooms at a very, very young age, and I know people that have come in at an old age. The oldest person I ever saw come in the rooms came in the rooms at age 69. One day I was at a meeting and I saw this young girl was going to lead the meeting, and she started talking and sharing her experiences, and she claimed 7 months of sobriety and she never got past age 12. And I asked her, I said, well, how old are you? And she said 13. So these are the extremes.
Oh my.
But Alcoholics Anonymous is interested in that 69-year-old person as much as they are interested in that 13-year-old person.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teens and alcohol.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with George from Alcoholics Anonymous about teens and alcohol addiction. Well, let's talk a little bit about how addiction begins and how it takes hold so that parents who don't know what to look for maybe can sort of watch and see if there are any red flags that come up.
I'm trying to think in that fashion. I don't really know how addiction gets hold of you. What ends up happening is you take a drink. You start to feel a little better. You feel a little bit part of the crowd. I couldn't communicate with my parents. I couldn't communicate with other people. The so-called peer pressure of the crowd being with me. Every person wants to be a part of something, somewhere, somehow. And it doesn't affect you immediately. We drink and we don't get in great trouble. And then, well, we got by with it this time, so let's try again a little further, or something else is going to happen. And do I get mad at my boss? And do I get mad at my spouse? Or do I get mad at my kids? Or the other side of the coin is quite often, I want to celebrate. We don't question, you know. A couple of times I tried not to drink, and I always started drinking, and I didn't drink because something bad happened. I drank because something good happened. I wanted to celebrate.
Isn't it interesting that the greeting card industry, I'm just thinking of a lot of our different cultural sort of touch points, but the greeting card industry, when you get cards that celebrate something, very often they have little champagne glasses. Mm-hmm. So in our culture, that's part of celebrating.
Yeah, it is. It really is. But then eventually, alcohol turns on you. As I said, the invisible line, if I can, this is an analysis I would like to try to give you, and that's called the pickle. If you take a cucumber and you put it into a barrel of brine, in a moment in time, it begins to a pickle. Once it is a pickle, it can never go back to being a cucumber. Now, if you took a bushel of cucumbers and threw them into a barrel of brine, not every cucumber becomes a pickle at the same moment. You know, it's not like midnight and everything happened. And if we took it out at 1 minute before, it was still a cucumber. And 1 minute after midnight, it's a pickle. They all change at different times. So that's why alcoholism just continues on. And do you come in at age 69 or do you come in at age 13? I have 37 years since I've had a drink. It's a long time.
It is.
However, I am not cured. I still have to keep and maintain my sobriety, and I have to maintain and associate with people as far as people who drank. My friends are people who don't drink, who don't want to drink. I have no personal objection to people who drink, and if it's social drinking, I love being around them. When I was drinking an active drunk, I did not like obnoxious, arrogant drunks. Today, I still don't like arrogant, obnoxious drunks. But the ability to be able to drink, I wish I could. I cannot drink. I cannot safely put alcohol into my system because I tried. I tried it all before I threw in the towel. Since I threw in the towel, it's the greatest thing that's ever happened. And the way my life is going, I can't describe.
How did you personally know that you were addicted? I'm thinking how parents could know if a child's addicted, how a teenager could know if a teenager is addicted.
I do not come from the school of stop the world, I want to get off. There's many a person who's taken a drink, oh, it's great, and now I'm into stop the world, I want to get off, I don't want to face reality. I tried to use alcohol to improve my status in life, which was fine. It did. It worked for a while. And then somehow or another, as my father being the drunk that he was, I couldn't con my father. But when my father died, I was 25 years of age.
That's pretty young.
That's pretty young for me, but I couldn't con him. And that's when my alcoholism started to take off because I didn't have to answer to him. Even though he knew everything that was going on with me, he did his best not to let me get in trouble. I think all parents, including myself, want to prevent our children from going through the problems that we faced. I did the same thing. I can see my daughter is doing the same thing with her children, trying not to get your rear end in trouble.
Do you want to explain about your daughters, that things have gone through your family so you sort of get a sense of how things get carried on?
Well, yes. Part of the reason I threw in the towel is my daughter was 12 years of age. And she said to me, I hate you. And I looked at myself and I said, I was becoming exactly what I despised in my father. And whether she was a straw that broke the camel's back or whether she was a big brick that was put on the camel's back, I don't know. I don't remember exactly when I threw in the towel, but there were other things. My wife was ready to throw me out of the house. The boss was ready to fire me. I was having problems with the court system. And somebody one time told me, they said, if you come to these rooms, you will come for yourself. You won't come for the wife, the kids, the judge, the boss, or anybody else. You will come for yourself. But I did come for the wife, the kids, the judge, and the boss because I didn't want to lose my marriage. I didn't want to lose my children. I didn't want to lose my job. And I sure as heck didn't like what the judge was saying to me.
Aha. What about teens who binge drink on the weekends and say, well, you know, this is only the weekend, or at least they say it to themselves, this is only the weekend, and even in college, this goes on a lot. What would you say to that?
I consider myself very fortunate. I was a daily drinker. Therefore, I know what I faced on a daily basis. The binge drinker has a period of sobriety. They don't know when they decide to throw in the towel as to whether or not this is their last drink. What is going to happen? Because when they started drinking, they said, okay, fine, you know, maybe 2 months from now, I will go on another binge. Something else will happen. And while they're going through that first 2 or 3 months of sobriety, am I going to pick up again? I don't know. Because they recognize what sobriety can give them. Yet by the same token, this is where alcohol is very cunning and baffling, is you just don't know what alcohol is going to do to you. But what ends up happening is that the binges get closer and closer and closer. In college, did we have a binge drinking once a month? And then the next thing you know, it's every weekend. And then the next thing we know, maybe when we get out into the world, we find at 5 o'clock at night when we have to go out there and want to get away from work, we want to relax. So we go find our peers and we go to the local bar room. And so on and so forth. Now, or maybe we're just going to binge drink, period. Maybe we're going to always be a binge drinker. Again, it's one of those things that we just don't know what can happen.
So patterns can evolve without necessarily any planning at all.
That's correct.
And it seems like the things that happen to teenagers and college students that have to do with no planning, lack of inhibition, crossing the line in lots of different categories happen very often when alcohol's involved.
No question.
Are there certain personality types that are more likely to become addicted to alcohol, have you found?
I don't think so. Alcoholism is a equal opportunity illness. It shows no partiality to sex, male or female. It shows no partiality to religion. It shows no partiality to race, economic factors, age. Is for everyone. And I think, as somebody one time said, AA is a melting pot of everything. We are people who would under normal circumstances would never meet.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teens and alcohol. For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with George from Alcoholics Anonymous about teens and alcohol addiction. You were talking before the show about various factors that could lead into addiction. You want to go over those a little bit?
Well, genetics would be one of the facts. Because of the fact that my father was an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic, I got a daughter who's an alcoholic, and I sat and I talked with a couple of my grandkids. I don't know whether it will be passed on to them or not. But that is one thing that can happen. I also have another daughter who might occasionally have a beer. She has no desire for it whatsoever.
Could she pass on the genes
from your father,
even though she's okay?
Yes, she can. She can pass on the genes to her children. Environment can be another factor. What is going on at home? Can I communicate with my parents? Or when I talk to my parents, are my parents putting me down? I don't know. Now, parents have to look at themselves in that fashion. Am I willing to listen to what my children say? Am I communicating well with them, or am I trying to determine and control the outcome of their lives? Those are two of the main things that I think that would attribute to it. Now, you also get caught into the peer pressure that I want to be with part of the crowd, but it's there. And that's the main thing that we can say is it's there.
Do you think parents who are worried about this whole alcohol scene should not have alcohol in their house?
My take on it is simple. I have alcohol in my house. Matter of fact, I've got some open bottles that were opened 37 years ago, and I don't know whether I dare open them because I don't know what's inside them. Some people in AA will say, you've got to get rid of the alcohol. Somebody like myself is, I entertain people. I have stuff for people that come in. I can't put alcohol into my system. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that this is what I have to do. It's okay for me to go where alcohol is, because if I don't go where alcohol is, I'm not facing reality. I'm not facing that alcohol is out there. I've got to be in a position that I can go to places where it is. If I have a good reason to be there, to go in there and have a party and have fun and all that other kind of stuff, that may not be a good enough reason. But, you know, when I go to a wedding, I don't have to drink alcohol. If we joke about this, this is one goodie, you know, if somebody comes into the AA rooms and they say, well, how am I going to get through my daughter's wedding without a toast? And they say, how old is your daughter? Well, she's six.
It's a little wild.
It's a little wild down, you know. But this is some of the thinking is, how am I going to do that? It's something that I have found that is good. Now, there are other people in the program who want to stay away from it. They just don't want to be associated with alcohol, period, or end of report. The main thing is, again, that I can't put alcohol into my system.
Is there anything you'd like teens to be especially aware of during prom season and school breaks?
I'm looking at it from the point of view of AA, that we are not going to try to control drink. We're not going to tell you you should only go have two or three or four. AA's prime function is don't drink. Come and help us, and we'll help you not to take a drink. And hopefully you won't take the first one. However, if you do take a drink, don't be afraid to come back. Because we do understand. I've known people that have come in, and maybe the first couple of months of coming in AA, they may go back out and have a few drinks because they're not exactly sure. I've known people that have hung around the rooms, in and out of the rooms for 20 years, keep coming in and out. And AA says, keep coming back. It's the idea that eventually you will, in turn, come to realize that the people who have alcoholism can help you if you want it.
Well, we are almost out of time, but talking about help if you want it, are there some resources that you'd like to leave parents with and teens with who'd like to learn more about addiction and alcoholism?
Alcoholics Anonymous, you will find it in the telephone book. I can highly recommend to both teens and parents to go to 5 or 6 open AA meetings. Just don't go to one and get turned off. If you're in a city, go to various meetings. Go to 5 or 6 of them. You'll see different types of people, different age brackets, and listen to what is said and see whether or not it fits. Like the first thing they told me when I first came in was identify in. Look for the similar things that have happened to you. The other thing I can say is if you have a teenage child or if you have a problem or is to go to Al-Anon, find out Al-Anon. Go to Al-Anon and do that. There's also another problem. If a teenager has a problem with their parents, if their parents are drinking too much, find Alateen. Alateen, in turn, will teach the child that they're not responsible for the actions of their parents. And you can get all of that primarily out of the telephone book.
You mentioned earlier some pamphlets that people could ask for. Do you want to repeat what those are?
One of them particularly is called Young People in AA, and it's called Pamphlet 4, and I don't know what it sells for. I think it's 25 cents. And then these are freebies, and it's called A Message to Teenagers, How to Tell When Drinking is Becoming a Problem. And you can probably get those at any one of the central offices of the area of where you happen to be living.
Do people from Alcoholics Anonymous come and talk to groups of teens or groups of parents?
The answer to that is yes. Alcoholics Anonymous has a public information section. Each area probably has a public information committee. And the prime thing about Alcoholics Anonymous in this fashion is that we are an anonymous program, but we are not a secret program. We need to inform the public that we do exist, although we are not going to go out and take sides and we do not go out and try to solicit. However, if you call your local AA office, you will probably find someone from the public information section who would be very willing to go out and talk to almost anyone. A lot of it's in the schools. A lot of it's in other segments of society. Sometimes you'll go and talk to 150 people and sometimes you'll talk to 5. But it can be gotten, and AA really is very concerned about public information and going out and letting people know that we do exist, and please come. And please call us.
Okay. And it's a free service, right?
And it's a free service. As a matter of fact, one of the great things about the AA is the fact that it is a free service. If I can, I want to throw in one more thing.
Sure.
And that is, anything that I have said is my own opinion based upon my own experiences, and I am not trying to reflect this as to it being on Alcoholics Anonymous.
Well, you have certainly gotten the message out to parents and to teenagers. So, George, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're quite welcome, and it is my pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 397. Please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. And tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a podcast of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible in part with generous support from you, our listeners. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.